damn you! God damn you all to hell!
Ape Not Listen to Podcast About Ape, on episode 20 of the Cut Print Film Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Cut Print Film Podcast, episode 20.
Wow.
My name's Jeff Rollins.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Benjamin Ghazi.
Well, no, you're not.
I'm John Voight.
Okay, perfect. Superstar John Voight's in studio, and he has questions about Benghazi once answered. This is a film podcast, yes. I'll have you know.
We mentioned John Voight up front.
Yeah, he is a film star of the past.
Yes, yeah. He's been in films, and nobody sees those films anymore because John Voight is irrelevant.
He also he brought us Angelina Jolie, so we have that to thank him for.
Yes,
Angelina
for
Voight.
Worse. What?
Angelina Voight.
Well.
He pulled her from his forehead like a Greek god, I believe. That's a...
He's like, Pygmalion?
Yeah.
Hey, guys, we're off the rails already.
Yeah, all right.
Good night, everyone.
This is episode
20. I said it. 20.
What are we talking about? Any news?
No news.
No news is good news.
We're reeling from the death of Heath Ledger.
That's right.
Still.
I can hardly believe it. Seems like only yesterday.
He was so young.
That Christopher Reeves died.
It's episode negative 277.
Everyone's confused.
Yeah. All right.
Even I'm confused. I'm here.
Well, what are we talking about that's real and not made up?
A very, very big movie came out this weekend.
Yes.
What was it? I'd forget.
It was called Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes. Not long enough in my book.
I loved how when the movie started and that title came up and it took up the entire screen, title.
It also took up the first 15 minutes to get all those letters on screen.
It was as wide as the widescreen would allow, was the title.
So I think we can officially call this podcast The Dawn of the Planet of the Japes.
I don't know what that even means. That's terrible.
I'm tempted to just stop and start over.
That is horrible wordplay. Holy shit!
It's
amazing wordplay.
I don't even know what you were going for.
We're gonna need you to turn in your badge and your gun.
Yeah,
and don't forget your ankle gun.
Yeah,
and your ankle badge.
And my ankle bracelet.
Turn your ankle in.
So this is a pretty good movie.
Yeah, it is. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Chris, you gave it an 8 out of 10.
Yes, and I will stand by that.
Cutprintfilm.com, which is where you can find all our articles and other podcast episodes.
Yeah,
on the internet. That's where we do things. Our office is the internet. Enjoy.
Yeah. Just mail it to us at theinternet.com. We'll get it all.
I'll have to explain the internet to you after the show.
I'm the dissenter, I think. Well, I didn't like it as much as Chris did.
For the record, let's say Dave went in wanting to hate this fucking movie.
Yeah, which I don't understand. Did you see Rise of the Apes?
Yeah.
Pretty much all
I
week,
big on
the
it.
Week leading up to the movie... As reviews were coming out and everyone was giving it stellar reviews, Dave was like, bullshit, fucking bullshit.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Dave just wanted to hate this movie.
Well, they did go way over the top.
They did.
Some critics went, Badass Digest, their review said it was one of the best movies of the year, which is pushing it.
I saw, if you see any movie this summer, make sure it's Planet of the Apes.
I will say it's one of the best movies of the summer, but this summer has been garbage.
This has been an anorexic summer for blockbusters. You got this film, you have Edge of Tomorrow.
Right.
If you want to argue that The Winter Soldier was a summer movie.
I don't, because it's
in
not.
April.
Yeah, it came out in April, so that doesn't really count, even though that was a fantastic movie. Right. Other than that, we've had Drek, like Transformers.
Yeah. And Tammy, which we'll get to later in the show.
In the second half of the show, we're going to touch Tammy, and we're going to have to wear gloves while we do it.
But yeah, I don't think this is the best movie of the summer. I would say it's the second best. I think Edge of Tomorrow is still the best movie of the summer, but this is a close second.
This is a really good movie.
You think Edge of Tomorrow is the best movie of the summer, not just best super movie?
What do you mean by super
movie? Are you
movie?
Talking like, about Life Itself?
No,
are you including that?
No.
The Roger Ebert
I would include that, but I don't think that's better than Edge of Tomorrow.
All right. The best blockbuster of the summer would be Edge of Tomorrow, even though it did not bust the block, unfortunately.
No, the block is still intact.
Yeah. It sort of, it basically, it strafed the block. It didn't bust it. But Edge of Tomorrow is a better movie than this. But Dawn of the Apes is a damn good movie.
It is. And what makes it a good movie? You know what? Here's what I want to talk about. Dave, what makes this just a good movie of a really good movie?
Dave claimed it's a 6 out of 10, which is fucking way too low.
And I would agree with
Chris. I would say 6 verging on 7.
I would say 8 out of 10. Right. I agree with Chris.
I would say if I had to pick, it'd be 7.
I hovered at 7, but I really think, okay. I personally think this is better than Captain America, which...
I can't remember Captain
eight.
America.
So I would push that this is an 8.
All I remember is that elevator scene that I really liked in Captain America.
I liked both films for completely different reasons.
Right.
I give them both an 8, but...
I don't know. The thing I liked most about this is it's what I liked about it and what I also didn't like about it is that it's really serious. And on one level, that's great. Because very rarely do you have like a big summer movie like this that takes its plot seriously. So I really like that, but on another level, I was like, "This is a little too fucking serious."
But that, you won't.
It's very, very serious in tone.
Right.
There's no air to, like, you can't breathe.
Right.
Like, it's very, very, very like narrow-minded in its focus on what it wants to do.
That's sort of like why
there's no air. There's no room for fun.
Right. That's sort of why I liked Edge Tomorrow a little bit more, because that movie had a lot of fun with its premise, and Dawn of the Apes has no fucking time for fun. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it comes to a point where you're like, oh, this movie needs to fucking breathe a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a little too bleak for a movie about apes who ride horses and talk.
But as we talked about before the show, the original Planet of the Apes,
right,
are bleak.
The original franchise is very bleak, but still, this felt like almost oppressively bleak at
times. You're dying to say something, Dave. Please speak.
I would say that its seriousness is what is also what makes it good and bad, because it gets really silly at one point, and that feels so jarring that it makes the movie kind of strange. I'll say it's serious in the same way that Jurassic Park is a serious summer movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
yeah, because there are serious like ethical questions that it asks.
And
just like Jurassic Park did.
And unlike the original Planet of the Apes, this one seems to be taking place in the real world. Like or at least trying to.
Right.
And when they leave that, it feels phony.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying?
No.
Because Jurassic Park, it never, which is a film that this closely mimics in tone, I think.
I got that Jurassic Park feeling almost immediately.
I don't know if it's what's his name with the hat on,
right,
and like
Jason Clark.
Jason Clark from Zero Dark Thirty, who's fucking awesome
in
this
movie.
He's
excellent.
He's a great actor. I love him in pretty much everything I see him in. He's
But it gets when it changes gears. Jurassic Park never does that. It always feels like the dinosaurs exist in the real world. The monkeys at a certain point start to feel like
monkeys. Dave, really? Come
they
on.
They have tails. Knock it off.
The humanoids start to feel like they aren't real. You know what I mean? Like they're not acting like real creatures.
Well,
and at a certain point, they're like the double wielding machine guns. Like I get that. That's
The way, let me just state that we are going to spoil this film in case anybody's
curious. That's spoiled in the fucking trailers, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's
right. But before we go any further into the plot, we're going to spoil Planet of the Apes.
We'll try it. When we get to spoiler parts, we'll yell out, "Spoiler!" really loud.
And dare I say, we're going to spoil every film in this franchise's existence.
You know where it's going.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think everyone is familiar with
the basics. Throw it out there.
And, when it gets to the point where it's World War Apes, it kind of like didn't feel authentic. Like I wanted to see actual World War Apes if I'm going to have to see it, not this like phony thing that was happening.
Yeah.
Well,
but that one shot, I will say this, the shot where it was like it was fixed on the tank.
Beautiful.
That was very cool.
That was beautiful.
Oh, yeah,
camera
the turret is spinning and the camera.
Just a real stylistic choice that is like,
I
didn't see it coming, and it was like a nice, refreshing change.
It's a great way
We go back to the way that the film was going.
It's a great way to show everything going on at once, just with the camera
a nice
spinning.
Tracking
like
shot.
I mean, I will defend that. I will defend the whole the apes don't act like real apes thing with the fact that they're technically they're genetically altered. So I mean, that's why they're not gonna.
Yeah,
but I like that the film took moments to make them seem like there's a thing that happens a lot in the movies where, when an ape is trying to ask for forgiveness, he'll crouch down and hold his hand up. And that's a thing real apes do in the wild. Like they, they need like the alpha to like slap their hand, basically. It's like, oh, all right, I'm showing you.
I loved that.
Like I really like that. And like pretty much anytime the apes interfought with each other, they like they seemed like real apes, and I thought that was really well done.
All of the ape stuff I love. It was once apes and humans started interacting was that the movie started to feel wonky, and I maybe it's an uncanny thing. And the CGI was amazing, but at certain points,
was it ever, man?
Yeah, this is some of the best CGI in a while.
Like when they're flying through the air and stuff, it just felt a little uncanny,
right?
And that took me out of it a little bit. And I get that it's a fun summer movie, but at the same time, it's not acting like a fun summer movie. So why should I treat it like one?
I touched on that in my review, and that's sort of like. The only real problem I have with the movie is that it wants to be two things at once. It wants to be this serious movie about
a commentary on
like humanity and also gun culture and stuff like that. But it also wants to be a big, ridiculous apes are riding horses and jumping through flames movie. So it's sort of like it has a trouble reconciling those two tones a bit. But I think in the end, it's successful.
Yeah, I had Chris and I had the same issues with the film. You mentioned that the trying to balance that fine line, walk that fine line between being a over-the-top summer blockbuster and a commentary on our society as it is now.
Right.
And also, the apes are far more developed characters than the humans are. It's not even a question.
The humans are like an afterthought in this movie, which isn't a bad thing, but it sort of seems like, why are
I
they
say
even
it
in
is
the
a
movie?
Bad thing.
Okay.
And that's why I wouldn't give this thing a 9. I would give this thing a 9 if
the human
characters were developed more, if their motivations were more fleshed out. With the apes, you know why they're doing every single thing they're doing.
Right.
Every choice they make, every move they make, there's a
every
reason
behind.
Every
breath they take, every we'll be watching them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now I'm.
But what are you, are you saying the motivation of the humans isn't clear?
No, it's very clear. It's just hollow.
Okay. The only human character who has any development is Jason Clark's character.
Right. And he's wonderful.
And Gary Oldman's character has a little bit development, but there's a thing.
It's just so broad.
All right, spoiler. At the end, Gary Oldman literally just blows himself up, and it's out of nowhere.
It comes out of nowhere.
I feel like a lot of Gary Oldman was left on the
It
on
felt
the floor.
Like yeah, they yeah. cut a lot. Like he has a,
That's
a
yeah.
There's that, a really nice moment where like the power comes back up and his iPad comes back and he sees his family and he's crying. Right. I was like, that's a great character moment.
But
and then he's
happened,
like, at the end, he's like, I'll fucking blow myself up. But it's like, oh, that seems sudden.
Yeah, and he never really mentions that family before that scene happens or after.
I think it's just like, assumed that they're dead from the virus.
Right.
Yeah, but still,
I get it, but come on.
And like, yeah, they sort of like, they set him up at the end to make him, it's like, it's parallels. Basically, Caesar and Koba, they're the parallels of Jason Clark's character and Gary Oldman's character, where... But Koba, the monkey, the ape Koba, is so much more developed than Gary Oldman. Whereas Gary Oldman, they want him to be an antagonist, but he doesn't seem like an antagonist till the very, very end.
Yeah, till his last minute in the movie,
like,
really.
He's a little...
I don't think he even feels like an antagonist at that point. He just feels like a guy who had, like, his perspective is different than what yours is.
And there's nothing, and it's just the fact that he's willing to blow himself up seems so out of left field. It's
I mean, I get it.
He's trying to
stop, you know.
No, like I said, they make it perfectly clear what the character motivations are. I just feel the humans just don't have as strong motivations as the apes.
And Carrie Russell
do you think
has
that's,
nothing to do in this movie.
Right, and nothing against her. I think all the actors are terrific in this
They just
film.
Don't. They don't have anything to do.
Do you think you're more biased against the humans because the apes are animals and therefore they're... Their motivations don't have to be as fleshed out.
No.
So they seem...
I don't think I'm more biased for that reason, but I do think the movie did a really good job playing on the emotions of people that can empathize with animals better than they can with humans.
Like me.
Yeah.
And my wife. My wife's the same way. She will cry if an animal's killed on screen, but not if a human's
That's
killed.
How I am. If a dog gets killed on screen, I'm like, oh no.
Even the bear at the beginning, I was like, fuck.
Yeah, God. And that was rough to watch.
Yeah.
Because you're watching... In that case, the bear's the innocent because it's not self-aware apes are.
Yeah, it's not his fault.
But I don't know, because when Kobo shoots those two guys, it's pretty rough.
Well, yeah, I want to get to that, too, that this movie makes a big This movie, I think this is the most effective movie to not ever, but in a long time to demonstrate how fucking dangerous guns are.
Yeah, you touched on that in your review about the sound of the guns and how they are. That is a piercing sound when every time a gun is fired.
Every time a gun went off in this movie, my wife had 10 heart attacks. Yeah. So she literally jumped in her seat. And even I got a little jumpy. I don't get that much. Like, when there's a scene where Koba shoots those two guys, and that's fucking brutal. It's funny the way he steals the gun from them, but then
it goes from a fun house to utter horror.
And I could feel the theater felt like that way because everyone was laughing when he's acting like he's
being a circus chick.
And then he shoots them,
You know it's coming though.
But everyone in the theater got dead silent. And, that's a really well done scene, and it shows just how fucking horrifying these weapons are.
You know it's coming, but you know that there's going to be a war coming throughout the entire movie, and yet the movie does such a good job at making you care about the apes more than the humans. Yeah. I mean, you care about the humans, but it does such a great job at making you care about these characters, the ape characters, that you're willing to wait it out and go along for the ride, even though you know that we're going to have a war no matter how many times they say they don't want war.
Right.
That says a lot about how good the film is, as far as the story goes. This movie is driven by a great story, and it's told perfectly.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, I forget what I was going to say. okay, this is what I was going to say. It's strange, though, how I read a thing that said the producers denied the anti-gun message.
I feel like they're going to say that just so that they don't want to seem controversial.
But I don't know, because when I start to think about it, our culture is more okay with gun violence than they are with actual violence, and it's strange that the monkeys are using guns when or apes. Sorry,
yeah, come on now.
We lost all our ape listeners.
Pete is texting me as we speak.
When apes are naturally six times stronger than a man, there should have been a lot more people getting their faces ripped off
and their genitals,
and their fingers chewed off. You do see that with the apes pounding on one another and on some of the humans, but
that's the thing, is that the apes would pound each other, but they were rarely pounding humans, and if they were, it was off screen.
And it says a lot that this movie is allowed to be PG-13 with all that gun violence.
Exactly, that's what I mean.
But they won't show bodily damage, limbs being ripped off, lips being bitten off,
they don't show
eyes being gouged out.
They wouldn't show natural violence as opposed
to that stuff that happens every single day in the wild naturally, whereas guns are a man-made device.
Yeah.
And it's just fine to have guns and tanks being shot into people.
Back to the graphics. They were amazing.
Some of the best I've ever seen.
Yeah, there were parts in this movie where
you were watching. They felt real on screen.
I felt the opening in the with the hunt that looked a little wonky.
Yeah,
there were times that looked a little cartoony.
Looked a little hobbity.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I'm gonna say I feel like that was training wheels getting you leading you into the movie. I think that might be why it felt so odd to see
even the monkeys at first.
God damn it.
Apes at first felt when they were talking, it was oh, this is cheesy, but it slowly ropes you into it.
Right. And I like the way that they make it seem as though it's an effort to speak.
It's hard for them.
Yeah.
It's hard for them because they have to think about verbalizing, because they all know sign language. Which I want to say is fantastic, the way that this film uses just the quiet of the forest, and these apes are signing to one another with the subtitles.
It was brave. I'm going to say that.
Very brave.
Because
there were children in my screening. Yeah. And
a majority of the audience can't read.
Yeah, average Joe Sixpack moviegoer doesn't go to a summer movie to read the screen.
That was a very brave choice, but it strengthened the movie. I thought it made it better.
Yeah, I guarantee there were notes coming in, can we make them talk here?
Yeah, but it forces you to, focus more on what they're saying.
And I liked that they're signing, and that's their primary way of communicating, and they say a couple words here or there when they really need to.
Right.
But they also...
Ape, no kill ape.
Right.
They say ape a lot in this movie. I think ape is said every single scene.
But I think that...
They never say monkey, though.
I mean, I like to imagine that's how humanity started.
I like that.
I feel like that's a great parallel.
So they're just cavemen.
Essentially, yeah. They are a reflection of us as like this movie is a duel like that.
Yeah, yeah.
A duel like when they're fighting.
Yeah, like the truck movie, the killer truck.
Yeah,
movie,
the killer
duel.
Truck movie duel from Steven Spielberg.
I thought that was Joyride.
No, you were obsessed with Joyride.
That's a different truck movie.
But yeah, I really like the way that they communicate, and they also when they resort to ape behavior, where you know the oohs and ah-ahs,
right.
It seems a whole lot more natural, and I can forgive them for resorting to that animalistic way of communicating.
Right.
Whereas in 2001's Planet of the Apes, directed by Tim Burton, this is a fully functioning ape society. They have a Senate. And for some reason, they are oo-ooing and ah-ahing. Every once in a while, they oot-oot and ot-ot.
They love their bananas.
And they're hanging from fucking chandeliers and stuff. Like, just give me a break. Eat shit and die, Tim Burton. God.
But that's also paralleled with a human oo-oo and on the dude from Oz. I don't know his name. He's essentially the...
The antagonist.
The archetype that, you know, embodies the negatives of human nature,
right.
Where he's
also
fearful.
From the TV show Fringe, correct?
I've never seen it.
I don't know the gentleman's name.
So
poor
even,
show prep.
Even though we don't ooh-ooh and ah-ah, we still, you know, he shoots a monkey the second he sees one.
What a dick.
That's a fucking jarring scene, too. He just shoots the thing, and you're like...
You're an asshole.
But... That is the one time that I can empathize with that character because he was scared.
Right.
And he says, I was scared.
And then he just becomes a huge dick.
He becomes a cartoon character. I don't like that character.
That character was a little too weak.
Too over the top.
Oh, I stuck a gun in. And then it's like, you know, and he's like shocked that they're making him leave. Like, you know what? You're an idiot for bringing a gun.
And the reason they needed him was very thin. Like,
oh, he understands power. And then they don't even use him.
He's the only damn guy. We only got one damn guy.
Yeah. He's the only damn guy who survived
and
the apocalypse.
I love in your review that you say that
they didn't use the damn dirty apes joke.
Yeah.
Someone suggested that while they were making it.
They used it in the 2001 apes with Michael Clark Duncan, except they flip it to make it hilarious.
Oh, God.
You get your damn hands off me, get your hands off me, you damn dirty human.
Oh, get it? Shut up.
I want the most say it. Damn dirty ape.
And that is a... That's... A part of this movie taking itself seriously that I like was like, no, fuck that. We are not going there. We're not. This is not a cartoon.
Because even the first one in this franchise, Rise, that has a lot of those jokes in it. Like, there's a part where fucking Draco Malfoy says that. I forget his character name.
Yeah, that
Bullshit McGee, I think was his name in that movie.
Yeah, that was it.
Feels cheesy.
Like, there's a lot of that in that.
There's a lot of that tone in that movie. That fake. That's not in this at all.
Like, I liked Rise, but this movie improves on every single aspect of that movie.
Whereas Rise was a surprisingly good movie.
Right. Rise was like, that's better than it should be.
Yes, the emphasis on the surprisingly part.
Yeah, like, that was a movie that no one expected to be good, but it was.
I was shocked. Like, well, that was... I had a pretty good time watching that.
That was an utter horse shit, we all said.
We had an ice cream cone.
The CGI... I feel a little disenchanted, though. Like,
really?
Maybe I'm spoiled and jaded at this point, but, like, the ape on the horse with the double guns, like, I didn't think that was...
It was a little
...as
odd.
Amazing. And I don't know if it's just because I'm so used to it at this point.
I guess. I mean, there was a time where if we had seen an ape on a gun firing a machine gun, we'd be like...
Yeah, it didn't inspire...
We'd be like, holy shit, but now we're just like, oh, all right.
Like, if that was... Like, maybe they could get me if it was a bunch of trout fighting back with machine guns.
Trout on horses?
What?
And they made it look, like, convincing, then I would be like, holy shit,
Planet
it's a trout,
of the trout.
It's Big Mouth Billy Bass singing Take Me to the River, firing a fucking revolver.
Trout, no cool, trout. Wow.
Yeah, like, maybe that would do it for me, because I'd be like, holy shit, how am I watching this?
Yeah.
That's a trout riding a horse.
See, I think a great thing about this film is that I wasn't even thinking that this was CGI. Like, that was just pushed back into the basement of my mind, and I was just along for the ride.
And that's all because of the performances.
Can we talk about those performances?
Let's do it. Let's get into the performances.
Tony Cabell, is that his name?
Tony Cabell as Koba.
Yeah.
He stole the show, and that is impressive.
Stole from Andy Serkis.
Because
he did.
Andy Serkis is absolutely fantastic.
I mean, he's an
film.
Expert at this point. Like,
oh yeah,
he's your go to guy.
He
but,
is.
But Tony Kebbell, oh holy shit,
he I don't know how much of the facial work is the actual actors. Like facial,
a lot of it is
because
like they put sensors all over their faces to capture.
They have a camera watching their.
He has such an expressive face. Right. Oh, it's just you can feel the anguish.
That's a fantastic
character. In his face. It's crazy.
Like even though he eventually becomes the villain, you I won't say you root for him, but you understand exactly why he's doing what he's doing.
Right,
like,
which is what we spoke about.
Particularly the scene where. Caesar says, "Let them do their human work, right. and they'll
oh,
go
that
away."
He points
and
his scars.
Yeah, that is heartbreaking.
Like, the human work. He and points all his scars.
There's that part. He comes back and he sees the apes like lifting rocks for the humans, and you can feel how fucking angry he is about that. Like, ugh.
But you understand. Like,
yeah, you
understand his motivations.
You get why he's being a dick,
and you can empathize with them. Whereas with the humans, yeah, you understand their motivations,
right.
but I just don't. Buy it. I don't.
Yeah.
This is so like.
Yeah.
It's just. I don't know.
I almost feel like we're at the point where if they just made a movie, if they made the next movie nothing but apes, I'd be fine with it.
Yeah. Story wise, I would have rather spent more time in the Ewok village than in San Francisco.
The Neverland from Hook.
Aside from Jason Clarke, who fit right into that universe perfectly.
Right.
Even better than James Franco did.
James Franco is terrible in that first movie. He's, and this isn't just my James Franco hate coming through. He's bad in that first movie. He looks bored. He doesn't seem like he wants to be there.
I guess he caught a case of the simian flu.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, he's not in this
I want to see that movie where he just slowly dies.
It's about James Franco getting
it's
the
like
flu.
It's like a short film.
No,
actually,
the short film is they called him up and they offered him a number, and he said, "Nope, I'm not going to be in this movie. Yeah. I'm dead."
But now the success of Dawn, I guarantee that we'll see James Franco in War of the Planet of the Apes.
You think so?
Yeah.
As what though? I think he's
he'll
dead.
Just come back and be like, "Caesar, I've been looking for you."
All right, cool.
Well, then let me just say I won't be seeing that film.
He'll be trying to fuck all the 17-year-old apes.
Well, I'm sickened.
Yeah.
I got a bunch of notes here. The score was kind of like fun. It was weird. It was old school.
It was
the way I would put it.
A lot about this movie was old school. We talked about the Jurassic Park feel that it kind of had. But yeah, the score, it was like old time movie like.
Yeah, it's Michael Giannaccio. I don't know how to say his name.
Yeah,
but
I'm not sure how to pronounce
He does a lot of the
one.
He does scores mostly for J.J. Abrams. Like he did the Star Trek movie scores. He did the Lost score.
Did he do Cloverfield?
He did.
Because this was directed by the Cloverfield director.
Yeah, he did. He briefly did some music for Cloverfield. He does a lot of that kind of.
And I'm a big fan of the direction of this film.
Yeah.
So like
he didn't direct Rise, did he?
No,
okay. It was Rupert Wyatt directed Rise.
Rise. I saw somebody say this, but I'm going to steal it. that the title should be switched.
Yeah, I saw
they
that.
They should,
too.
Yeah, because Dawn fits more for the first movie than this movie. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Rise definitely fits the tone of this movie.
That didn't really bother. That's just semantics.
Yeah.
Are Kobo. So you guys are more familiar with the original Planet of the Apes than I am. Are Kobo and Caesar characters in that?
No, there's no Kobo.
Caesar is in the original franchise, but not
till later.
There's a character who's like Kobo, but I can't remember his name. He's in the last of the original franchise where he's like sort of he's the ape challenging Caesar's authority, but it's not the same character.
Because I thought I had a feeling Caesar was going to bite it at the end of this movie.
So did I.
Right?
Yeah, and like they fooled
didn't.
Me.
Yeah.
You, like that part,
and I was so happy when he was alive.
Yeah,
yeah. That I'll agree
you
with
just,
that
because you knew he was the only one who could fucking fix things.
Yeah,
like, he needs to come back. And
were you going through the mental process? Like this is what I was doing, and this says a lot for the movie getting my investment. Because as Chris said, I thought it was a bucket of shit before I saw it.
Yeah.
As things kept getting more and more fucked up, I kept thinking, like, okay, well, this is all Caesar has to do to fix that.
Yeah.
He's got to explain to them this.
No, yeah.
Like, I'm trying to go through how he can make this better.
Like, part of the reason I think this movie is so successful for me is that I don't have anything invested in this because it's a fucking movie about apes.
Right.
But there's such a amount of, like, as the movie progresses, you feel the dread, like, right. Even though, like Jeff said earlier, we all know a fucking war is coming because it's in the goddamn trailers.
Yeah,
but you're like, oh, don't, like, when Koba starts going nuts and doing shit that's going to start the war, you're like, stop it,
yeah, please stop.
You're going to get everyone killed.
But that. Like, you're actually, like, begging him, don't do that, because you sympathize with him. Like, I understand, Koba, don't do it,
Yeah,
Koba.
You're gonna fuck everything up for everyone.
And can I just say, that says a whole lot about how great this story is, that we are fucking pleading with
cartoon
a character
ape.
That doesn't exist. Yeah. Like, it's impossible for this to even exist.
Yeah, it's like pleading with a box of cereal not to destroy something. It's like, that's not going to do anything.
And I feel like part of that is, and I'm surprised, Dave, that you don't like this movie as much as Chris and I do, but I feel like a part of the reason that it's so good is because it draws on a lot of Shakespearean themes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, Koba is Iago, if I've...
Yeah.
Oh, the parrot from Aladdin.
Exactly. Yeah. Koba's Gilbert Gottfried's character in Aladdin.
Yeah, I mean, the Othello parallels are... And even, like, the...
Which is my favorite Shakespeare story, Othello.
The Shakespearean elements of the story, which are natural drama things that make me uncomfortable. It's the... Things being misunderstood is a major part of Shakespeare. Yeah.
But the characters don't. Yeah.
And that... It kept happening... Like, they kept going to it, and I was like...
But it wasn't, like, stupid. Like, you weren't like, oh, fuck off, asshole.
Right. Like, it's not like that movie, Oh, where Othello is set on the basketball court.
Just stop it. is that with Josh Hartnett?
Yes, and Julia Stiles is in it, I believe.
He can just fucking bury himself into a grave. fucking guy.
A grave. Any grave will do.
Hopefully an unmarked one.
Get out of my grandpa's grave, Josh Hartnett. I'm sorry, Jeff told me to get in a grave.
It was a good movie. It just wasn't as good as Edge of Tomorrow, and Edge of Tomorrow was an 8, so this has to be a 7. All
right. No, but
on my scale.
I think at the same time, and Jeff said this earlier, you shouldn't look at movies on the same... It's such a different movie.
No, but
movie.
You should compare movies that are in the same...
Genre?
Yeah, not even genre, but category. And I would put these two movies in the same category.
I don't know.
They're appealing to the same audience.
I would say Edge of Tomorrow is 8, bordering on 9, whereas this is 8.
Solid.
That's how I would put it.
We're also not taking in the fact, and this is also a plus for the movie, this is a sequel.
Oh, yeah.
Which
is one of those... This is one of the... Like, there was a time... It almost became like a joke where it's like sequels inevitably suck. Like fucking Scream 2 made that a huge plot point.
Yeah.
Where it's like, let's talk about how sequels are bad.
And we all laugh.
Yeah, ha ha ha, Jamie Kennedy.
Jamie Kennedy's out of work for some reason. Just a talent.
Like, we've entered this weird new era where sequels are not like, because I mean, look at The Dark Knight. Everyone heralds that as the best in that franchise.
Well, this joins The Dark Knight as better than its... And its predecessor.
It's like, that's no longer an issue. We're like sequels.
And Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was... Okay, so...
And Captain America, again, jumping on that. Like, that's a sequel that's better than the original.
I'd say this is definitely more like Captain America compared to the Winter Soldier than Batman Begins to the Dark
Knight. That's just like...
Because Captain America, the first one, while it's okay... It's not great, just like Rise of the Planet of the Apes is okay, but it's not great.
Yeah, this
and Batman Begins is okay, but it's not great.
Yeah, but it's better than
The Dark Knight is just fucking amazing.
Right. Yeah.
It's like a different level, but and I also think Dawn it perfectly stands
Who's
on
Dawn?
Its own.
Where
Dawn
is she?
Dawn was the character in the film of the Planet of the
Apes. Oh, that's her?
That was Caesar's wife. When she, the one who gave birth, that her name was Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. That's why it was called that. But no, but this...
Well, I could just riff on this for
please, let's keep going. But this is a movie that...
And Shaun of the Planet of the Apes
stands,
is coming.
It stands completely on its own. Like, if you hadn't seen the first movie...
Nick Frost is in that.
You could... All right. I'm going to stop talking because no one gives a shit about my fucking point. We just want to make goddamn Dawn jokes for the rest of the fucking show. What else rhymes with Dawn?
I don't know.
Prawn. Yeah. Prawn of the Planet of the Apes.
That was District 9.
What else?
We started with...
Lawn.
Yeah. Lawn
Caesar, are you going to cut your grass of the lawn of the Planet of the Apes? Anyone else? Anyone else want to fucking throw one out there? It's riveting.
Lawn of the Planet of the Apes might be a good movie.
No.
Hey, Jeff, it's time for a commercial break.
All right, let's go to Chris in Chopped or Cut Print Film.
Hold on, let me set it up here. Hey, Chris, can you hear us?
What? I can't hear you. I'm coming live from the Cut Print Film News Chopper. I wanted to tell you guys to go to adamandeve.com. Adam and Eve is an adult store. You can shop erotic adult toys and novelties.
Chris, did you say Adam and Steve?
No.
I think we lost Chris.
We'll have to check in on him later.
Anyway, go to adamandeve.com and type in DEAL48 in the promo code and get 50% off one item.
And free shipping.
And you'll get 3 adult DVDs and a free gift.
I wonder what the free gift is.
Probably a dildo. Lube.
Of the apes. You're listening to the hottest new indie hits on Cut Print Film FM.
Hey now.
Okay, I don't know why I did that. That's wonderful.
Okay, Chris, as you were saying.
Oh, was I saying something?
Yeah, I think so.
What was you saying?
Basically, what I was saying is that I feel like this is one of those movies that if you hadn't seen the first film, you'd be fine. Like, you don't really need to have seen the first film to enjoy this movie.
Yeah.
It sort of stands alone.
Yeah, my stunning wife has never seen the first one. And she said it was a boy's movie. That was her.
The first one or this one?
She never saw the first one, and she just wasn't too into it.
My wife actually liked this one, and she doesn't like movies like this, so.
My wife did, too. I don't think this is a boy's movie. I think this is a movie for
people.
You know,
although my wife did have a problem with she did bring up that, you know, she pointed out like there are no good female characters.
Not
in the
a
movie.
One.
Like, yeah. Carrie Russell is a waste, and like all the apes you care about are the guy apes. No one cares about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Okay, if you're looking at it that way, then yes, this is a man's movie.
It doesn't pass the kaiju test.
It does not. They'll have to make a new one.
Was it the Mako Amori test?
It was the
who gives a shit? Am I right? I'm right.
I'm right.
The strange thing about this Planet of the Apes is that it doesn't feel at all like the original.
Oh, nothing.
No, it doesn't. I prefer this franchise over the original.
So do I, because the original is silly.
Yes, it's men wearing masks.
And as those movies go on,
they get worse.
By the fifth one, you are watching guys in rubber Halloween masks.
Yeah, the mouths don't even move.
Nope.
You just see like the chin go up and down.
Yeah, it's wiggling around.
Yeah, it's bad.
But it's strange because the sci-fi-ness of it, I guess, is that that's an expert term?
Nope. No.
I won't allow it.
That's not anything.
The original has that like Land of the Lost feel where
goofy.
It's like silly 70s sci-fi.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't silly at the time,
No.
It was serious.
Yeah, you think it was?
There are people who love those fucking movies.
I enjoy the first one, but that is some over-the-top nonsense. That Charlton Heston character, he is just a goofball, and I don't think anybody took that seriously back in the 70s. I think the twist ending rocked everybody's minds. I don't think anybody saw that coming in the
70s. Where Abe Lincoln is a monkey?
Yeah. No, that's the 2001 Fart Knocker movie, directed by Tim Burton.
I will say that even though I like the original franchise and I like the first Planet of the Apes, if that film hadn't had that ending, it would not have become the cultural touchstone that it is.
I agree with
you.
That
entirely. That ending is that movie.
It's parodied a lot.
Because as good as the makeup and effects were for the time, they're not that great.
Yeah. And the plot of that movie is actually silly, really. It's a silly, silly little movie. But that ending is like a gut punch. So,
is it silly? Apes that can talk?
It's a little silly.
It's a little goofy.
Yeah.
They also walk like humans.
Yeah. And they wear tunics.
They walk like a man and they talk like a man?
Yeah, they do. It's terrific.
I had a point about planets and apes and those types of things.
How they're not mutually exclusive.
Oh,
there are many planets with no apes.
some.
Dawn had a bit of a lackluster ending, though.
Think so? You mean like after the big battle? Because I like that.
Yeah,
big,
the big battle was fun.
The big battle on the tower.
Yeah, but then it's just like run. And then it's over.
I mean, that's how you got to end it, because you got to leave room for the seat for part three.
But where does the next movie take off? With the military coming?
I guess it's more. The third one's going to be like all out war, basically. That's what they're setting up, where it's just humans fighting apes.
I would actually prefer if it started like after the war had already happened.
I would too.
I would too.
Like I was saying, I would be fine if the next movie is just apes. There's no humans.
Because
like, they pick up a human skull and they throw it. That's the only reference to humans in the third one.
The first like 3 minutes of this film is just exposition telling you, hey, this is what happened since the last movie. Let's play a little catch up.
I would enjoy if the next movie opens with like a gray haired Caesar with like a bandolier on.
Smoking a cigar.
Oh, speaking of that intro, I didn't get to see it because there was literally a crackhead sitting next to me. Oh. And
literally?
Yeah.
Was he smoking?
He was like on drugs. Like,
oh, great.
Like it must have been Oxycontin or something because he kept like.
Oh, was it Rush Limbaugh? Was he next to you in the theater?
He was in the middle of an Oxycontin fit.
And he crumpled up a piece of paper and threw it at you. It said, Nation.
This dude kept like. He would just like be holding his drink in front of him, like up like this.
Yeah,
and I'm like, what the? I had to put my hood up and like position it so that I couldn't see him anymore.
He was distracting.
Your hood? You're wearing a cloak to this film?
I wore a jacket. It was a bit. There was a chill on the air.
Dave was dressed like the Angel of Death.
He's a level 12.
Level 12 movie watcher.
This is. I digress.
Oh,
all right. But. These new theaters with the assigned seating, I love it.
Oh, it's the best.
But there's an issue with people who show up late and start moseying around looking for their seat.
Oh, yeah. That's the worst.
You get that all the time.
Not only that, but I've had many issues with people being in my seats.
Oh, yeah. That happens all the time.
Or the people next to, like, because there's just the people who come in, they don't look at their ticket, and they sit down. Right. Like, oh, these look good. And then it's like, these aren't your seats. Get up. And it, like,
when I saw Edge of Tomorrow, there were these three tweens, and as we all know, tweens are my favorite members of society. They came in, three tween girls, probably like 10 minutes into the movie. They couldn't find their seats, so they all sat in one seat. One girl sat down, then her two friends sat on her lap, and they were giggling the whole fucking movie.
I feel like the problem-solving skills aren't sharpened with these young ladies.
So I screamed in their ears until they left.
That's what happened when we went to see Godzilla. There were three people sitting in Sam and I's two seats.
Yeah.
And we were like,
great. Sounds great.
We were like, these are our seats. And they just kind of looked at us, got up, and left. Right. Like they had snuck
they
into
literally
the
left.
But there's an issue because you end up missing the exposition of a film because there's people like causing a ruckus. Like even if it's the people next to you like who are sitting in the wrong seats, it's like, oh, these are my seats. And I've had it where like I've seen it. Where in front of me, like someone had to go get a manager and tell them.
Yeah.
And
unlike a concert where there's an usher to help you, there is no usher in the
That's
movie
what
theater.
They need.
They don't give a shit. They're kids working for like $5 an hour.
And I understand that part of it too. I get it. But when I went to see Planet of the Apes, I went to a theater that had no assigned seating, but it was stadium seating. And so you see everything in front of you.
Ugh.
And it was I like stadium seating.
Ugh.
But
no, I'm kidding.
People came in late, and I don't know what type of cell phone this gentleman had, but it might have been. I think he had a piece of the sun. I think it was Icarus, and he flew too close to the sun, got a piece, and brought it into this fucking movie theater.
Use it as a phone.
It was lighting. He was looking for his seat, I guess, and he was lighting up the entire theater, and it was very distracting.
I'll just add that I never understand people who show up late to a movie.
No, me neither.
If my wife and I are going to a movie and we're running
just
late,
see the next show.
Yeah, I'm like, well, we gotta wait. Like, even if we're like 2 minutes late, I'll be like, no, I can't do it. I gotta wait. People come in. They come in 20 minutes late to a movie. Like, what are you doing? You're going to miss everything.
It's rough. I mean, I've been running late because of, you know, traffic and stuff. And
yeah, but even then I'd be like, all right, we're going to the next showing.
There's like 40 minutes of trailers now.
That's
like
true,
almost impossible to be late.
But even with those trailers, people show up like 30 minutes into the movie after it started.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
But I read a thing that AMC is rolling this out in every theater they have, because even though it's less seats, they're making more money because people want to go back to the movies.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
They're also charging more for that feature to choose your seat.
Which does suck, but at the same time, I like it so much that I'm not.
Yeah, I don't care.
The one issue I have with the assigned seating is that the seats recline, and I can fall asleep very easily in a reclined
position.
I love
the reclining. I love it. Oh, it's my favorite part.
I was thinking about this. It's not... I don't fall asleep, and I don't have an issue with that.
Ever? You're like Christian Bale in The Mechanic?
Crazy.
Machinist. Yeah. Mechanic's a different movie.
He fixes my car. But I feel like there are some movies that should not be watched laying down.
Right.
Yeah.
Like serious movies.
Like Sleepy Time Tea, the motion picture.
Yeah, that's the one.
No, it's not that. It's like a film like Schindler's List. If you went in nowadays and that was in the theater and you reclined and watched
I think
something feels wrong about it.
I think like you should be drug out by your gums.
The reclining is more for, like, I would say, like, blockbuster movies or like horror movies.
Like Philomena.
Yes, yeah. Or The Boy in the Striped Pajamas.
Yeah, that's a great movie to just snooze right through. Nice lighthearted romp.
But the problem is when it's there, you're going to use it.
Oh,
you
yeah.
can't.
And yet the only problem I have with the reclining is that they're a little noisy, so you'll be in a movie theater and they'll just hear as like someone in front of you is reclining.
I haven't had the noisy part, but I have like wily elbows, so every time I go to get my drink, I'll hit it and it'll be like, and I'll like jump up an inch.
I mean, in talking about that, your elbows are made of coyotes.
Yeah, your wily e-coyote elbows.
But I feel like we're moving towards this Wally type society where we're going to be watching everything.
We roll in
down.
On our own chair.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait.
You just roll in and you dock your chair.
Yeah. Or you just lay down in your car and drive.
I welcome that society because and everyone will be as fat as I am.
Hey, speaking of fat, I saw a film called Tammy.
How was it?
Oh.
Jammy.
No.
It was, there was some music in it?
No, there was no jams and I was not in my pajamas. Yeah, I wanted to talk. I saw this 2 weeks ago, but last week we did our Stephen King extravaganza.
Yes.
So I didn't discuss Tammy. This, my goodness.
Really good.
My goodness. First of all, I went by myself. My wife even said, I don't think so.
Oh, that's sad. I'm picturing you in the theater alone seeing Tammy.
No, I wasn't alone. I was surrounded by, I went in the middle of the day.
Okay.
The day that it came out.
It was like the third of the day before the 4th of July.
Yeah. Right. And this was not, I wouldn't call it a packed theater, but I thought I was going to be truly by my lonesome. And I'm going to say there were probably 35 people.
I thought you were going to be alone too.
Yeah. There were 35 people with me.
Well, in our own way, we're all alone.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway.
We're going to get into that later. But yeah, this film, just from minute one, is a dud. It's dead on arrival.
This film doesn't seem to be as big as Melissa McCarthy's other movies, which I'm happy about, because I think people are finally catching on that enough's enough with her one note, I'm a fat woman who falls down character.
Yeah, like, and
should we watch the trailer on air in case the audience missed it?
I'd rather not ever watch it again.
And again, nothing against... Not again, but nothing against Melissa McCarthy. She's very talented, but enough. Enough is enough.
Is she? I mean, you and I, Chris and I, had a conversation about Melissa McCarthy, right. And we were both of the opinion
naked.
That... Yeah, we were both naked.
You were both naked, and she was naked.
But we were texting, and we were in our own respective homes. It made no sense.
We were both in hot tubs.
we had a discussion about Melissa McCarthy. And
for president?
No.
Okay, I'm not going to
What are we doing here?
Stop it, Dave.
What is this?
Stop it.
We had a discussion about Melissa McCarthy, and I said, like, she's talented. She doesn't need to do a movie like Tammy. But as I'm thinking about it...
She's always played Tammy.
She's always doing this character.
And, like, I thought it was that, that's the only work she could get. Everyone's just offering
her. I don't buy it.
But now, like, she wrote this movie.
And produced it.
Her husband directed this movie.
She wrote and produced this. She had her husband direct her in this. And it is absolutely terrible.
So, yeah, it's not just an issue of, oh, she's a fat actress and she can't get work that thinner actresses get. It's just, I guess she wants to play this kind of character.
Yeah, she likes it. And
And I'm sure it's probably fun to make the movie, but it's not.
I'm sure, but it is no fun to watch.
No.
And, like, you can see scenes where she's clearly ad-libbing.
Right.
Clearly.
Yes.
She's going off script, yeah, if there even was one. And it's just not fun. It's not funny. There's no fun to be had. It's just awkward to watch her. And I have a feeling that...
Was the theater laughing?
Not in this scene that I'm thinking of.
Okay.
There were laughs.
Yeah, overall, how did the crowd react to it? Because I know there are people who just... I work with a lot of older women, and they find her hysterical.
There were some laughs that people had to stuff that I was just not...
Right.
I was just not buying in.
Right.
And I guess I can understand why you might find that funny. There's one gag that almost made me laugh, and it has nothing to do with Melissa McCarthy. It's just a sight gag.
It's not when she says that she was running from bees.
No. Is that in the movie?
No,
she's running.
No.
From, is that, or is that from Tommy Boy?
No, that's another really thing. She's just ripping off Chris Farley.
Yeah,
gags.
That's a scene in Tommy Boy where they get pulled over by a cop and he says there are bees in the car.
Yeah, no, she does.
Oh no, she. That, yeah, that's
in this movie, yeah, too.
And
all right,
and it's there's no winking to the camera. It's utterly shameless. She's just
stealing from
Tommy
Boy.
I forgot about that, yeah, scene
of all the films to steal from.
The cops are trying to arrest her and she starts running and then she's like, "Oh, there were bees."
That's blatantly
and
from Tommy Boy.
And Tommy Boy's not a great movie, but there are funny...
Get out of here.
There are funny things in Tommy Boy.
I don't even want to hear what you think of Beverly Hills Ninja.
No, I don't think anything of it. It's just dreadful. Also, Wagons East, his last film. But Chris Farley's last film. But even with Black Sheep, the follow-up to Tommy Boy,
right,
that is much worse than Tommy Boy.
Yeah.
But even that has some funny things.
I mean,
Gary Busey's just absurd in that. But this film, like, she's trying to be a female Chris Farley, and it's not working. I don't think she's not likable enough.
Right.
She comes off as crass, whereas Chris Farley is like a lovable dumbbell.
Right.
She doesn't come off as stupid. She just comes off as crass, gross, and unapologetic about it. And
right,
it's not endearing, and I think she thinks it is. It's a terrible movie. I gave it a 1 out of 10.
Yeah.
I had no fun watching this movie.
It's not even that. It goes back to the evolution of comedy, and I think that if Chris Farley would even have a tough time playing...
Oh,
now,
this would be a terrible Chris Farley movie.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Did you see The Heat?
No.
With her? That I actually thought that was funny. Did you see that?
I didn't bother because I'm sick of her
it's
shit.
It's the same character.
And we were talking about this before.
Just from the trailers alone, I can tell that.
And I was saying, what would actually have made me see that movie, or made me at least somewhat interested in it, is if they had flipped it.
Yes.
Where Sandra Bullock is playing the abrasive character, and Melissa McCarthy is playing the straight-laced character.
Now, like, we have a movie that I would actually enjoy watching.
Like, I want to see her in a movie where she plays a fucking normal human being.
Yeah.
Not like this obnoxious loudmouth screaming about fucking pies for 2 hours.
But this,
I don't...
this goes back to what I was saying originally, where Chris and I were discussing, like, how she's talented and she doesn't need to do this type,
right,
of character. I don't know that she is talented. I really don't.
Did you like her in Bridesmaids?
No.
It's really?
Strange.
No, she's shitting herself. Like, what the fuck is this?
I thought she was good in that.
It's
right.
Like, she's like an Uncle Fat. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't think Fatty Falls Down is a funny concept.
I mean, there was a review I read that called Tammy a fat girl minstrel show, which is brutal, but
yeah,
also it's accurate.
It's brutal, but it's apt.
Yeah.
And... Oh, man.
And people still ignored it. I saw reviews for this that were saying it was a good movie.
No, it's
which
not
blew
even close.
My mind. There are reviews by people I respect who defended this movie.
And you know what the problem with this, like, Adam Sandler puts out the same fucking shit,
right,
year after year, year after year. And with that, the reason he keeps doing that is because we keep going to see those movies.
Right.
So he gets a pass. Adam Sandler gets a pass because shame on us,
right,
for seeing these movies. But with Tammy, shame on Melissa McCarthy for making this film and thinking that this is what we want to see. Because I don't think we want to see this. I don't think it did very well.
It didn't. It was not. I mean, it made
It was
money.
A low-budget film.
Right.
And I think it made money because of that. But I think it's – how far down did this move on the box office? Because it's only been out for 2 weeks.
It's at number three. It's
really
made $57 million.
Hey,
so
okay, shame on us again then.
Yeah, we're idiots. And
but
it's also that has to do with the lack of films this summer.
Yeah.
And especially comedies. I mean, the last comedy that came out was 22 Jump Street, and that was...
That got great reviews, and that's at the, what, number four position this week?
Yeah, and people want to see comedy in the summer, so it makes sense.
Well, don't go see Tammy, because there's not a joke to be found. Nary a joke.
See Transformers. That's hilarious.
Yes. That's got Cade Yeager in it.
Yeah, Cade Yeager's in it. Kelsey Grammer is in it, playing a CIA agent. That right there is funny.
22 Jump Street has made $171 million.
Good for 22 Jump Street, because I hear that actually has jokes in it.
Yeah,
it
does.
What?
Nothing.
Can you...
I was going to say, can I have some of that 22 Jump Street money? Because I would like one fraction of that money. Sometimes... I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but as much as I love movies, sometimes when I think about A, how much it costs to make a movie, and B, how much movies make, I'm like, can I have like 1/1,000,000th of a percent of that in my fucking lifetime?
No, you can't.
I can't.
Movies are a risky business where the payoff is huge.
Like, sometimes I stop.
Yeah, it's an enormous risk.
I stop and I think about how many movies have been made in the last 10 years. Let's just say 10 years.
Yeah.
How many of them have been quote-unquote good movies? Not a lot. And yet, so that makes, like, I would say if a movie is good, it makes it that budget almost worth it. And think about how much money has been spent on fucking just dreck in 10 years.
Yeah.
And movies have been around for over 100 years.
There are things that you know are just going to be really, really bad, even just by reading the concept of the film,
right.
The premise.
And people throw millions of dollars. Like, you could take that money, you could build a better society with that money.
Bringing this back to Tammy, I will say that the premise of the film sounds like there might be some humor to mine out of this thing. But man, is the execution just piss poor.
How's the direction? Is it bad?
Pretty shoot. It's very
well,
basic.
The guy's not a director.
It's lazy. I said in my review, there's a scene where she's riffing to her manager in the very beginning of the film about how everybody knows that he sweats through his shirt and it's disgusting and that's a medical condition you have there. And they pan the camera over to the guy that she's talking to. Not a sweat stain to be seen.
Yeah,
how hard would that have been?
Yeah, that would have been.
How hard would that have been?
That would have been an easy joke right there, but no.
It's just god awful. Don't see Tammy. For the love of God.
I don't plan on it. But I can see, I'm not surprised it made $51 million because...
Yeah, fuck us. Fuck this society. It sucks.
Yeah, why not?
Wait, you said that The Heat was the more of the same, but what had she been in before that besides Bridesmaids? That was like her.
She's in that show Mike and Molly.
Oh, well, I totally forget about that.
Want to take a guess at what she plays in that?
Fat Lady,
yeah.
But she...
So funny.
Yeah, I wouldn't have any idea because that's so off my radar.
Yeah. Love a good fat joke for forever. Just keep making the same fat joke.
The never-ending fat joke.
It's just terrific.
Yeah, it's like Big Bang and nerd joke. It's like
nerd joke, fat joke. How about some fart? How about fart joke? The show.
Yeah, just 2 hours of farts.
Great.
How long until the shows are just called that? Fat joke.
Oh, we are just sprinting towards Idiocracy.
Yeah, we are. Yeah,
we're watching Ow My Balls.
Exactly. Yeah, we're a few steps away from just Laugh Track the show.
All right, I guess that leads us right to our movie recommendations.
Yeah, I've had enough Tammy talk.
Country film, movie picks, country film, movie picks, high voltage!
Get the fuck out of here with that one! Holy shit!
That was a work of pure art.
That was AC/DC. I got them to record that.
That's part of the reason I like doing these cold and not hearing them until showtime. My God, I enjoyed that.
I don't know, though, but it could throw you off. I fell on my chair once for one of them.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first, I think.
Okay. Go for it.
I switched this up at the last second, but I'm going to recommend the Spike Jonze short film, I'm Here.
Yes.
It's awesome. It takes place right before... It doesn't take place. He filmed it right before he filmed Her.
Okay.
He was kind of exploring... It explores the same kind of themes as Her.
Mm-hmm.
About like a near future where,
everyone has like high-waisted pants and...
Yeah.
Mustaches. To hide their hair lip.
But Andrew Garfield plays a guy with a computer head And there's just kind of like these robots, and I guess it's never really explained. They just do robot work, and the one robot falls in love with the other robot, and it's kind of like this, kind of like The Giving Tree, I would say, is the plot of it. It's about 30 minutes long, but it's worth watching. It's very good, and the atmosphere he creates as like a, a future world feels authentic at the same time as you're looking at these things that have like old Apple IIs on their head.
Yeah.
It's strange, but it's very cool.
That sounds interesting.
And you could see how that evolved into her.
When was this, 2012?
I think it was maybe 2011.
Okay. Fairly recent.
Yeah. It's a good one, though.
Is it on YouTube?
Yeah, you can watch it on YouTube.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like Chuck Jones. Or not Chuck Jones. He's Looney Tunes.
I love Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, I like Spike Jonze and his work with Roadrunner cartoons. Just fantastic.
Meep, meep. Whoa. What? Is there a monkey in studio?
It's somebody else's turn. I'll go.
That was the most blasé jump. <She's> like,
oh, those poor monkeys.
No impact at all.
My recommendation this week is also a recent one. It's the 2013 Oscar-nominated film August Osage County.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which I...
Really?
Yes.
That trailer makes me want to cut my own head off.
It is. It is. It's a bad trailer. And just seeing what you think the film might be is kind of like you turn your nose up at it because it just this seems like a film for old women.
It's like Oscar bait the motion picture.
Right, yeah.
And I personally do not like Julia Roberts.
I hate Julia
Anytime
Roberts.
I see her in a movie, I'm like, I won't be seeing that.
I hate Julia Roberts. I hate Juliette Lewis, who's also in this film.
Wow.
But.
The trifecta.
I hate her. But I love Meryl Streep. I love Chris Cooper.
Right.
And I generally enjoy Ewan McGregor.
I mean, other than Julia Roberts, it has a very good cast.
Sam Shepard is in it.
Right.
Abigail Breslin, who was in Little Miss Sunshine, is in it. She's pretty good in this.
Benedict Cumberbatch is in it.
Yes, and he's
good. He is?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He plays Sherlock in the movie. He's trying to solve the mystery of August Osage County.
And that's a thing I want to touch on. The casting in the film is really good. Benedict Cumberbatch plays Chris Cooper's son in the film, and this is impeccable casting because when they are in scenes together, identical.
Oh, like, yeah?
Oh, my God, yeah. And you would never even see that until you see them together.
See
because where else would you see them together other than August
Osage County?
Sometimes
we hang out, the three of us.
Oh, that's true.
One time I saw them together at Taco Bell. I couldn't even get that joke out because in my head I was picturing Benedict Cumberbatch at Taco Bell, and that's ridiculous.
This film, I'm going to read the plot summary real quick. It's a look at the lives of the strong-willed women of the Weston family whose paths have diverged until a family crisis brings them back to the Oklahoma house they grew up in and to the dysfunctional woman who raised them. And she's played by Meryl Streep.
Oh, excuse me. Let me cut my head off.
Yeah,
the plot synopsis.
Well, I think we can all relate to this some way.
Yes. No,
not just us three. I feel like a lot of people in the audience have a family member that they can relate to that is just a terror.
Oh, yeah.
A drain, if you will.
And Meryl Streep plays it perfectly. This woman's a pillhead, and she's
unbearable?
Unbearable. Yeah.
That's the feeling I got from the trailers.
And Julia Roberts plays her eldest daughter, who has some of her traits, but is trying to like fight against that type of thing. Juliette Lewis plays another daughter, and there's another daughter that I forget the actress's name, but she's excellent in this.
I think I remember.
This is based on the film's based on a play,
right? And I hear the play is fantastic.
The play's I never saw the play, but I can see the play in the film.
Okay,
and that is where my only issues with the film lie in. That some of the dialogue seems like it's pulled right from the stage.
Right.
There's a lot of expository conversations where it's just like, oh, you're just...
Because you need that in
You're
place.
Saying this just to set the scene for me when you really... A better director would not do this.
Okay.
He would have his actors... He would have... The screenplay would be tweaked a little bit so that the actors aren't telling me exactly what the fuck's going on. But it won a Pulitzer Prize for drama, the play did.
Right.
And it was directed by John Wells, who has done a lot of TV work and not a whole lot of movies.
Right.
He's done episodes of Shameless for Showtime, which is a show I'm just not interested in.
The show no one watches.
Plenty of episodes of ER. But yeah, Meryl Streep is just fantastic in this. She's a, like I said, an absolute terror, and like you're just cringing yeah. when she's going on a rampage, and it's just like, oh my god, this poor family. But yeah, so that's my recommendation. August Osage County.
I'm actually gonna watch that.
Yeah,
now.
You've piqued my interest because yeah, I never wanted to see that ever.
Check it out. It's on Blu-ray. It's not streaming anywhere.
Poor ape.
Caesar! All right, Chris.
I was hoping that would just keep going. My pick is the 2001 HBO movie Conspiracy.
Ooh.
This movie, it's sort of like a reverse 12 Angry Men. Basically, it's about the Wannsee Conference where the high-ranking Nazi officials, they got together and they basically planned the Final Solution. So the movie takes place, World War II is well underway, and the Nazis have you know, the Jewish problem. They have all these Jews in ghettos, and they don't know what to do with them. And this conference is basically how they all came together and said, "Let's just kill them all." And it's a brutal. Lot. It's a lot like 12 Angry Men, and it's a lot like a play in that it all takes place in one room. It's all just a bunch of guys sitting around talking, but it's so fucking compelling and so well done. Kenneth Branagh is in it. He basically plays the lead Nazi. I forget his name. I should have wrote it down. But he's in it. Stanley Tucci is in it. Playing,
oh, I love Stanley. Tucci.
He plays Eichmann.
Oh.
And there's a lot of like, who else? Colin Firth is in it. It's basically a lot of good character actors.
Yeah.
And they hold your attention just by talking.
I love that in a film,
right?
That just the dialogue drives it. I love that.
And like, and it's I recently just rewatched 12 Angry Men, which I hadn't seen since like high school, and I forgot how excellent that movie is. And this movie is sort of like the dark mirror of that, where it's. Where, like, 12 Angry Men, it's about a bunch of guys coming to reason.
To do the right thing.
Right, and this movie is, like, the reverse of that. Because as it, like, you have your high-ranking Nazi officials who basically, they're like, we're doing this. And throughout the film, there are certain characters who you can tell they're squeamish about it, and they don't want to go along with it, but they know they have no choice, basically. Like, this is what they have to do, because they're in the Nazi party, and it's either... All right, we go along with this, or we too will get killed. So it's
and you see like the corrupt logic that's applied to everything.
This is exactly like a deconstruction of 12 Angry Men. Oh, I'm so gonna watch this.
And it's on.
It sounds heartbreaking too. By the way,
it is. It's brutal, and it's on HBO Go, and it's just a really well done movie.
What makes it even more brutal? It's based on the Wannsee tapes, which actually exist.
Yeah.
I mean, they should have destroyed them, maybe, but
basically, They even say in the movie that pretty much every record got destroyed except one they didn't know about got kept.
Yeah, and it's like, it's amazing that it did get kept because...
no one would have ever known this happened.
I know, and it's like the thing, like, it's... Because the question that's always posed is like, how did this happen?
Yeah,
and we,
this is it.
You see the origin of it.
Right.
And it's
just
even
rationalizing this horror.
Right.
It's even creepier because they filmed the movie in the room... that it took place, like, it's actually at Wannsee in the building. Like, you can go to the building and see where the conference actually happened, if I'm not mistaken. I'm almost positive.
I think you're right. Yeah. But it's a compelling movie.
It sounds it.
And it's just, you know, it's a good movie because nothing quote unquote happens in the movie. It's just guys sitting at a table, but it's so enthralling.
Yeah.
You want to keep watching it. So mm-hmm.
Yeah. When did that come out? Cause I remember
2001.
Yeah. I watched it. That was my junior year in high school,
yeah.
And I saw it like when it premiered, and it was impactful. But I got to go back and watch it.
Yeah, like I watched it when it aired, and like I thought it was good, but it didn't have as much effect on me. But I just recently rewatched it a week ago, and I was like, "Holy shit, this is fucking
What's it called again?
It's called Conspiracy, and it's on HBO Go.
It's kind of a bad title for it.
It is. It doesn't really sell what the movie's about, but it's an excellent movie.
It sounds great.
It's really good.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Well.
Boy.
Just play those piano jams.
What a downer. This show's going out on.
Yeah. Chris, why'd you have to bring up the Final Solution?
Sorry.
I'm kind of glad you didn't go first, to be quite honest.
It's hard to follow up the Final Solution.
Robert Loggia looks disgusted. Yeah.
Sorry, Bob.
Sorry, Bob.
What do we got coming up? We should plug some shows.
Happy
we didn't do that.
Birthday, Jeff.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it is my birth. Thank you, Moon Man.
Thank you, Moon Man / Roger Ebert.
I'm 31 years young today.
Yeah, we got some plugs to get out there other than Jeff's birthday. MoreLikeRadio.com, where there's more things like radio than you've ever seen.
We're on that network, I guess.
maybe. Yeah, there's lots of like radio. And you can go to antifanboy.com to check out some
video games,
comic books,
even comic book movies.
Pogs. I think they talk about Pogs a lot on that show.
I don't think I've ever heard them discuss Pogs.
You're not listening close enough.
They went to PogCon this weekend.
Yeah, PogCon and PogCon.
I think they went to Kinetic Con. I think that's what it is.
Kinetic Pon Con, it's called, I believe. Pog.
But San Diego Comic Con's coming up. We'll probably have about 4 minutes on that, but I'm sure they'll do a whole podcast. So.
I was hoping we'd have 0 minutes on it.
I mean, they might announce something insane, like Star Wars will be filmed in black and white.
I don't think that's going to happen, Dave.
Also, Syndromes in a Cinema, that's a podcast one of our contributors frequently guests on.
Yeah, so check those out. Or just go back and listen to every episode before this of our podcast.
Right, this is now over 20 hours of us talking incessantly about movies.
We never shut up.
We don't.
So listen to every episode except the first one.
Please, don't listen to that first episode. The audio is just piss poor.
That was our pilot. We're still learning the ropes.
We were actually recording through CB radios. We didn't know what was happening.
Caesar, he had to let Cobra go.
Yeah, go see Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. It's fantastic.
It's very good.
And go to cutprintfilm.com for all our great, great film analyses and articles and reviews and whatnot.
We're begging you. Go to the goddamn website.
Yeah,
we put a lot of work into it.
We do.
That I will say one final thing about Dawn of the Apes. That line when he lets go at Kobo was killer. I thought it was going to be cheesy, but he delivered it good.
You not ape.
Yeah. Have a nice whatever.
Snap. What the fuck?
Please go to cutprintfilm.com for more movie reviews, opinions, and original articles about the movies we love and hate. And be sure to subscribe to the Cutprint Film Podcast on iTunes. I'm Moon Man, signing off until next time.